To all who shall see these presents, greetings. I'm Adam Best. This is Veterans in the Wild.
Reveille, reveille, reveille. Welcome to another show, ladies and gentlemen. I want to take a moment here and thank you for listening. And I'm happy for the feedback I've gotten. I want to encourage, if you do have feedback, if you have suggestions for the show, if you have anything that you want to hear on the show, or if you have suggestions for what we can do better, I'd certainly love to hear that. Instagram is a great place to find us. We're working on the YouTube channel, and we'd love to hear your feedback. So we'd love to connect, and we hope you're subscribed to the show. That's the best way to, you know, beat all the algorithms. That's the best way to keep us finding new audiences and to build a community. The better audience that we have, the better community we have, we'll be able to find better guests and create a better show for you. So if you have feedback, we'd certainly love that. And we appreciate your listening, but we are looking for feedback. And one more time, I will say thank you for everything so far. I've had a blast doing, I think this is episode 10. Today's guest is one of my favorite. And this was I think of him as my first chief. Technically, I guess that's not true. Someone I would have to acknowledge was Senior Chief Whiteford. We were together for about 2 months, but Paul Decker was an electrician's mate in the Navy for 24 years. We worked together on a destroyer for, I want to say, about 20 months, deployed together, and the value we had was, I was young, I was learning, and I was the guy in charge, but the value that a chief brings to a young officer is indescribable. And if you haven't been there, or you haven't been in some sort of leadership position, either in the military or in the civilian world, and you needed, or you had someone you knew, you know, you could lean on, you can't really relate to that as much. But the value that a chief brings for everyone to understand is that at that point, Chief had been in the Navy, I believe about 19 years. I'd been in the Navy about 19 weeks. So his experience and his leadership and his guidance was invaluable, because he and I can go talk privately and I can go, what the hell is going on here, Chief? I have no idea what we're talking about. And then we can talk, and then we can go back in front of the division, and I don't have to look like I don't know what I'm doing, because I'm supposed to be in charge of the entire group of sailors that we had and that he and I were responsible for together. But to have those moments where you can step aside and go, Chief, what are we doing? Was absolutely amazing. So what we're going to do with this show here is we're going to talk about his 24 years in the Navy, and then also some of the time of how we interacted. So welcome, Chief. We're glad to have you here.
Glad to be here.
So you enlisted, and can you tell us a little bit about the early years, or walk us through your early time in the Navy?
I enlisted in 1988. I went to boot camp in Orlando, Florida. I was going to be a nuke. Didn't work out. And they sent me to the fleet. My first ship was the USS L.Y. Spear. Started out as a bosun mate. Found out that the bosun mate rate was not for me. Then went back to being an electrician, which is what I had started when I was in
the nuclear
training field.
Yep.
I was supposed to be a nuke electrician.
Yep.
I didn't make it through the program. They sent me to the fleet. And I tried bosun mate for a while. And my chief pulled me aside and said, hey, this isn't for you. I think you need to go to the electrical division, which I did. And that's where I guess I learned to be an electrician.
Can you tell the audience what do bosun mates do, or what were you doing there with it?
Actually in the rigging loft, mm-hmm. which was fine. So you take heavy gear and move it around using chain falls, slings,
yeah.
wraps, muscle.
Yep.
And try and do it without getting hurt or hurting the equipment.
Yep.
which came in handy later because we were always rigging stuff in and out of submarines on my first ship.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, the only stipulation was you had to have a qualified rigger with you. So most of my guys got, well, I was one of the guys in, but we all qualified riggers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. Learned how to rewind a little bit. I was in a R3 division on the LY Spear.
Got to see submarines too.
Oh yeah, submarines. Got to see submarines. Well, what a joy.
I mean, I don't know. Did you see a lot of submarines?
I've seen more of submarines than I ever wanted to.
I was going to say, did you realize that you did not want to serve on submarines?
Oh,
either?
I knew I didn't want to serve on subs. That was talk about close quarters.
Yep.
But absolutely. To their credit, they got stuff to fit in places where you never would have thought it would have fit.
Yeah.
You got a motor generator and an overhead. That's no small feat. And that's where the rigging skills actually came in, because you had to get it back up there after you had it down repairing it.
Yep.
Good time.
I know you told me, but the original plan was 4 years and out.
That's
but I
fact.
Just told everyone that you had retired at 24 years.
Right.
What happened?
Yep. The original plan was 4 years and out. And the missus said, you can stay or I can stay. So needless to say, I stayed. And it's probably the best decision I ever made. Staying in.
What was happening? Did you like the reliable paycheck? Were you starting to see, did you have a family at that point? When did you meet your wife?
I met my wife while I was on my first ship. I was introduced by my first class, Larry Lee, who just recently passed away from cancer. And it's a big loss. He was my, what they call him, Ninong, which is godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduced us because I went to a Christmas party dressed in exactly what the captain said not to wear. I was a young sailor. I didn't really give a rip. Captain said no jeans or t-shirts. So that's what I wore to the party. And Lee was my first class at that point. Pulled me aside and said, hey, dude, you can't do that. And next week he introduced me to Margie. And we've been together ever since.
So he realized either he had to train you or someone else had to. So he...
Yeah, he employed her.
Yep. Smart.
Yeah.
And it seems like she's done a great job since.
I think.
Yep.
I think she has, yeah.
Yeah.
I know I couldn't live without her.
What was after, what was the next duty station? Where'd you guys go next?
Well, I made second class on the Spear,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of tough to do when I did it.
Yeah.
And then I went to shore duty, played master at arms for a while, and make an EM anything at that point in time was really rough. So I kind of tried to do a cross rate to NC, which was flying at that point in time.
But, what's an NC?
Navy counselor.
Yeah. Okay. So that's
all
sort
the
of
training I did for that served me well through the rest of my career, but they didn't think I had what it took to actually be a counselor. So they didn't give me that. So instead of going NC, I went back to C as an EM2 and made EM1, one out of six in the Navy at the time to make EM1.
Wow.
That was something else.
Yeah.
Actually had to dig for the points. to get it. No, yeah. I mean, that's for real.
Yeah.
Any of the junior sailors listening to this, don't take no for an answer. You know, if you have something that you think is going to count for you, definitely, definitely dig for it and get with your chief and get it sent up. It worked. Made EM1 and finished my time there on the Roosevelt. Then went back to shore duty as an instructor at fire school, which is by far my favorite shore duty tour. That was fun.
Setting things on fire every day.
Yeah, well, dealing with fires every day.
Legally.
Well, legally. knowing that the fire was going to go out, you know, was always a bonus. All you had to do was push a button. Yep. But
well, I was going to say
it was real.
Yeah.
And being up and teaching sailors, you know, how to do stuff.
Yeah.
You know, to keep them safe. That was fun. And that helped me out a lot with my confidence.
Yep.
You know, being able to do stuff like that.
And I think one thing the audience may not understand is, can you talk to how quickly a fire can destroy a ship, or how quickly it can spread? Or, I mean, it can spread through a house quickly, but what it can do to a ship is maybe not well known.
Well, one would only have to look at the Bonhomme Richard, you know, which within the last year burned.
Yes.
Down to the water.
Yep.
They were unable to save it. So, I mean, that's billions of dollars, billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars right there.
Yep.
And it all came down to what I think it came down to was poor housekeeping. They had chemicals and stuff stored where it ought not have been stored, and well, it cost them.
Yep.
Fire got too hot. On the other side of that, though, the team, the crew did put up a valiant effort. It was just an unsurmountable thing.
Yeah.
And firefighting on a ship is invaluable. There's no fire department at sea. You're it.
Yeah, you are the fire department.
That's it. And everyone has to realize that. Everybody's a firefighter on a ship.
Yep.
And that was part of the spiel that I gave, you know, when I was instructing. Hey, you're all firefighters. I don't care if you got eagles on your collar. I don't care if you got nothing on your collar, you know. And, you know, as far as fighting fires go, the big determining factor was how well did you cover yourself before you went in to fight that? Because a fire does not care who you are. It's going to eat. That's what it does. That's its job. So if you ever had any doubt about your equipment working, I mean, I had one class that I taught that I would take a fire, a flash hood and drape it over my hand and light a lighter underneath it and just hold it there. And the flame doesn't go through it, or the heat doesn't get through it. But I promise you wouldn't do that with a lighter in your bare hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, fighting fire is the most important piece of gear to me was the flash hood, because if you got it wrong, you'd know instantly.
Yep.
We had a trainer, that the 418 classes used. The 418 was advanced firefighting.
Mm-hmm.
Great big thing. A Ferrier firefighting school. And it got in excess 600-700 degrees in that sucker. So if you don't think 600-700 degrees will burn you, go home, put your oven on. Well, just 400. I mean, we'll give you a break. Just set it up for 400 and stick your face in the oven. And you will see just how important it is to get dressed out correctly. So basically, that was all just a big drill and attention to detail, because if you miss that one little detail, you're going to be ineffective.
Yep. And yeah.
Fire school. I also earned my MTS, Master Training Specialist, which is a big deal, I guess. And then went to the Enterprise. And the Enterprise was probably my favorite C command. I made chief there, so.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Good group of guys. I had 30 of them under me in the power shop.
Yeah.
So we basically took care of anything 440 and above, 440 volts.
Yeah.
And up.
Yep.
Which was all the ventilation and just about everything, because even 110 was broke down from 440.
Oh, well, yeah.
Through transformers.
Yep.
Good stuff. I was learning the entire time.
Yeah.
How to be a better guide or leader for my guys, trying to take care of my guys all the time. And that works out well. You get what you give.
Yep.
It's another life lesson. And then from the Enterprise, I went straight to the Oscar Austin where we met. And we had a great group. There's nothing that we didn't fix. So, I mean, I was very pleased with that. Now, I use that in my my latest job interview out here. In the real world, there's nothing that we didn't fix. I mean, I can honestly say that. And I just was put on by a marine electrical company.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah, it is. It's very awesome. I'm kind of stoked about it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see what comes out of it.
Yeah. What I would say for everyone listening, what we did on, I guess we didn't make the power on Oscar Austin on our ship together. We just basically took it and gave it to everyone else and fixed all the problems from bow to stern. I would say that's the simplest way to really describe it.
Yeah, I would say so.
No, I enjoyed that too, because I mean, electrical generation's cool, but that's really just making sure the generator works. We had all the different situations of, you know, sonar had a problem, they needed help, or they had a problem with the ovens in the galley. That's an electrical problem that we had to fix. Or, yep. Ugh, the boat davits. That is a word that, yeah. I think that's a word that we all hear and just still kind of cringe.
Yes.
That was our kid.
The thing to take away from all of that, though, is it took all of us working together,
yep,
to make everything go the right way.
Yep.
And we did. Whether it was with machinist mates, GSMs, GSEs, you know, we all worked together to make everything work.
Yep.
And that's the bottom line, you know, mission accomplished.
Yeah. One of the things I heard recently was that the reason the military works and the way the military works is that you bond in the military with the bigger the suck factor, it creates a bigger bond. So the harder times you have, the more you connect with those people. And what I was thinking was, you know, shore duty versus sea duty. Like, I probably remember those people better from sea duty because you know them at 4 a.m. There's not a lot of shore duties where you're standing watch at 4 a.m. And that's also what I was thinking back specifically with electrical division. Our time together was, even after like the ship came hit back from sea, we had the task of setting up shore power, which is bringing on cables. Well, that's not true. It's waiting for the ship to get tied up. It's waiting for that whole evolution of bringing a ship back to the pier, tying it up, debriefing all that, letting the ship like settle. Then we had to wait for a crane to come, bring our cables on, and hook up electrical power so the ship had electricity from the shore, not its own electricity. And what we were doing was installing those cables together as electrical division, the seven of us, and watching everyone walk off and get to go home to their spouses, significant others. And I know we all like watched everyone was just like, okay, I'm ready to leave. But I was relating that to, like, that was one of our suck factors was we knew we had to do it. We knew we all wanted to go home, but that was sort of one of our things. We knew that was ours. We knew the up and overs weren't another thing of ours. And we just knew, like, there's certain things that maybe we didn't like doing, but it was also, like, that was sort of our thing. And I'll let you share this one was we also had the D1R.
D1R?
Yeah, what's the
unwinding time?
What's the D1R?
Was it Grandma's Boy? Or was it...
Yeah, I think it was Grandma's Boy.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, time for us to unwind, you know, and just be together.
Yep.
That was invaluable.
Yeah.
Granted, I should have been kicking their asses, telling them, hey, get out there and get your ESWAS.
Sometimes.
Or watch quals.
Yeah.
And they all could have qualified a little bit more. But in my mind, what we did was more important.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need the downtime. Or what I think particularly what constantly watching the same movie was then we were all quoting it. Then we were all like, when you walked into the shop and it was playing, it was okay. Yeah, I'll take 5 minutes and screw off because, yeah, there's stuff to be done. But hey, we live here. We work 24 hours around a day. Like, there's stuff to get done, but I'll get to it. I can take 5 minutes. And it was sort of indirectly, or I didn't think of it. I didn't even start the thing, but the movie became our sanity. It gave you a break that you didn't even plan, or like it was the bonding time between whoever was in the shop and whoever walked in. Or because some of the times half of us were asleep because we were up all night, half of us were on watch already again. So sometimes it's two people in the shop, or sometimes it's five of us, or it's all of us watching the movie. Yeah, that really was an invaluable tool. And it's funny that like all it was one movie. Like, it's all it was, but
still watch it today.
I was going to say
a DVD.
I was going to say we should probably get off the show and go watch it after this.
Well, I think I might.
One thing I did want to point out, you came to the Oscar Austin, which is a destroyer. And like, I was like, this is an aircraft carrier sailor. What in the world is he doing on a destroyer? But that was a smart move for a handful of reasons. Could you talk a little bit about why you, did you pick orders to a destroyer? Or were you?
I did. I chose orders to the destroyer because I'd never experienced it. You know, it was another chance to grow.
Okay.
On a big deck, like an aircraft carrier, which I did two of, you know, you have one shop. So on my first aircraft carrier, I was in the lighting shop. Second aircraft carrier, I ran the power shop. I learned all about electricity and electronics on my first two ships was, you know, the L.Y. Spear and Theodore Roosevelt. And
yes,
that was kind of, you know, just actually getting in there and doing stuff.
Yes.
And then once you make first class, you don't really run out and do stuff right away. Because you have second classes and third classes for that. And then you're training the firemen. I mean,
yeah, it's truly not your job anymore.
The Navy works.
Yes.
Is everybody one grade above you should be teaching you.
Yes.
And everybody one grade below you should be learning from you.
Yep.
So when all of that works, it's a great thing.
Yep.
And then a lot of the other stuff that I did, like teaching the rest of the crew about ESFOS and all that, that just, you know, helped make me a better person, I think. And I still, from time to time, will see somebody that I helped and they'll still come up and thank me.
Yep.
And that's great. That's awesome. It's not why I did it, but because you know, I just want everybody to be their best. No pun intended.
Thank you. Yeah, I definitely think like that mentality definitely has helped your success in the Navy, out of the Navy. It would help anyone. That's a great mindset to have. I guess where I'm trying to pull 100 different ideas together was I heard you were on, you jumped from an aircraft carrier to a destroyer. That would help your career. That would help other people's careers. You had training as a Navy career counselor. So that's sort of human resources, or that's another tool in your quiver, if you will. I guess what I'm trying to build is, what was your case? Why do you think you were selected to be a chief? Or what I'm trying to say, like, yeah, you were an instructor or a master training specialist. You had experience on a carrier, on a sub tender. You were a Navy career counselor. Do you think, what was the secret sauce?
The secret sauce was EMCM Christopher Scarano.
Okay.
He helped me out immensely. He put me in positions where I had to do, you know, had to learn, you know, had to be challenged. And he backed me up the whole way. He even called me on initiation night, even though he was at a totally different command.
Yep.
Asked me how it was going. I think I was doing flutter kicks at the time in the mud, and one of my brothers came with his phone and said, here, somebody wants to talk to you. That was very cool.
Yeah. Where did you
somebody with was thinking, you know, yeah, about me.
Yep. Where did you meet him?
He was on the Enterprise.
Okay.
He was the LCPO.
Okay.
Great guy. Yep. You should try and get him.
I will.
I'll see what strings I can pull to help you out.
Okay. What advice would you have for a sailor listening to this that's an E4, an E5, an E6? Obviously, the dream is to make chief. What wickets? I guess I was trying to say, like, you did diversify the sea commands you had. You went to be an instructor. That's big for the Navy. Being a recruiter is big for the Navy. What other advice would you have as a chief? How do you get other sailors there?
Just be the best version of you that you can be. Try and improve every day and help people. The biggest thing for me was training people, you know?
Yep.
Because when you train somebody to do something, it makes you know it that much better.
True. Yeah.
Because if you don't know it, you can't teach it. And sailors, it's like anybody else, they can smell it. They can smell it. So.
And I think as well, when you teach it, I think it shows you what parts you know really well and what parts you don't know.
Right.
So I think,
the opportunity to improve the next time.
Yep. When I asked you your favorite Liberty call, you said Corfu was one of your favorite places.
Corfu, right.
What was unique about her? What'd you like her?
It was very peaceful. And there wasn't actually a whole lot of stuff to do there, but just go out and be on the beach and, be with yourself. Go out with your friends, maybe have a beer.
Good time to get off the ship.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's gorgeous. It is the most beautiful place I think I've ever been. I hear Fiji is comparable.
Yeah.
Maybe even a little bit better, but I've not gone to Fiji.
Yep.
I was an East Coast sailor my entire career, so.
One of the other things you mentioned was you were deployed when your father passed. You were amazed, though, and I think maybe one of the big benefits that the military does get right was that you were able to get home for that event. And the Navy, the military at large is, I think they understand that they take people across the world, but they also have families back home, and they do a pretty good job when they can of remembering that and trying to,
that's a fact,
bring people back. Right. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Dad passed away in 97.
Mm-hmm.
I was on deployment on the Theodore Roosevelt. The guys and I were up in the shop. It's an AFC playoff game. Chiefs and the Colts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got beat by the Colts. If anybody didn't know, I'm a big Chiefs fan. So have been for years and years and years. They called me down to the log room, and Chang, my Divo, and my chief were all there and had me sit down, and they told me that my father had passed, and they immediately started giving me instructions. You're going to fly out tomorrow. You need this and this and this. And it was seamless. I didn't have to worry about a thing. I got home in time for his funeral. I mean, he'd already been cremated, so I didn't get to see his body, but they got me there.
Yep.
And, we all have a responsibility. We all sign the line saying that we would give our life for what it is that we're doing. But I mean, that's nice to know that they have that too. You know, every veteran at one point or another has signed a check for his life to the country. And I don't know how many people realize that. Some of the younger guys watching that, yes, you did make that commitment. You will at some point in your career be put in harm's way in one shape or form, and maybe the bullet don't have your name on it. Maybe it does. So, you all signed, and that's a big thing. So, I was very, it was a sad day when I lost my father. I'm not going to lie.
Of course.
Probably one of the worst days of my life.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that the Navy made it better. They didn't, but they got me to where I needed to be.
And where were you in the world?
We were in the Adriatic Sea.
And where did you, go back to Missouri? Or where was the funeral?
I went back to Missouri.
And
Webb City.
Yep. And so that's what I guess what I was trying to show was you were there like 48 hours, 96 hours.
Right. Yep. And that's a great thing about being on a big deck like that. We have greyhounds. And they work well. Not only can they bring mail, they can take you wherever you need to go. So they flew me to Sigonella, and from Sigonella, I flew home.
Yep.
Or I flew to Norfolk and then got a flight from Norfolk. There's a plug there for the Navy Relief Society, too. Navy Relief helped me get the tickets I needed to be able to fly home. You know, I was E5 at that point. So.
Yep.
Didn't have much money.
Yep.
Had a wife and a kid and a mortgage payment.
Yep.
So yeah. Money, big holes for the money to go out of. And we didn't have a lot in reserve at that point in time.
Yep. Yeah. I would say the same thing. The Navy Marine Corps Relief Society did the same things. Loaned me the money to fly home for my grandfather's funeral. I was 3 months in the Navy. I presented my grandfather's flag from his funeral to my grandmother 3 months in the Navy. And to be able to do that was like, wow, that was a really awesome memory for me. But just like you said, like brand new, I'm 22 years old, a lot of holes, not the best income, whatever that situation was. But yeah. Same day, I had a loan from them to buy a plane ticket home, and I knew what my plans were, and yep, got home. Same day, attended a funeral, and yeah, just like you said.
So everyone should support them if you're in the Navy. If you're not in the Navy, I guess you don't have to be in the Navy to support them.
Yep.
So if you're listening to this and you're not, support them anyway. It's a great cause. You're taking care of sailors who are taking care of you.
Yep, absolutely. On a personal level, I mean, we do talk about, you know, we deploy, we take ships across the world, we learn firefighting. What would you say was your proudest personal memory from the Navy in terms of either with your family or, on the personal side?
Putting on Chief Petty Officer, hands down, having my family there with me.
Yeah, so they were involved in a ceremony.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
And after that, it's just taking care of the guys.
Cool.
Watching them grow. Some of them grew, some of them didn't. I think you know who I'm talking about. But
not our guys.
Not our guys. No. That was probably my biggest disappointment, was not getting that one individual put it on, because he had everything he needed to put it on, I think. And he just didn't want it, I guess.
Yep.
So I can't change that.
Yeah. You can lead the horse to water, right?
And then you can drown him in it.
It's not like going to drink it.
Right.
And you retired in what year?
2012.
And what's life looked like for the last 9 years?
I taught school
for
5 years. I was an NGROTC instructor for three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't see eye to eye with the other instructors, so went and sought life elsewhere. Became a science teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And did that for 3 years.
Awesome.
That was fun, but it's awesome, but I got to the point where I don't really see eye to eye with the system, and I don't want to get any of the negative stuff, but I don't like Common Core. We have a great governor right now that has done away with Common Core in this state.
Yes.
Best thing I think has happened to the school system since I've been involved in it.
Yep.
And then I let my qual slip for being an educator. Actually, you don't really need a qual to be an educator. You know, when you go out in the world, you educate every day, you know, your thoughts and your actions.
Yes.
A hello will go a long way. It doesn't matter if you know the person or not. You know, just greet them.
Yep.
You know, be a good person. And that's what we're all called to be.
Yes.
The greatest thing in the world is love. And it's not a lot of it out there.
You recently got a couple other qualifications. Your VSO?
Yeah. I'm working on getting through the book. But yeah, I'm a VSO. I haven't picked a post here. We just moved. But I will be seeking out the VFW here and maybe even the VA. I need to go to the VA and get signed up here.
What can you do as a VSO, as a veteran service officer, but what kind of resource would you be, or what, who would call on you, or how can you help people, maybe people listening?
As a VSO, I'll be able to help people get the benefits that they've earned.
Okay.
That's not really, you know, any greater calling, I think, as far as veterans go. You know, if I can help a brother, I'm going to help a brother. And you don't need to be a VSO. You know, all you need to know is some information, and the VSO will verify that. But when you write a claim, or, you know, you try to go to school, any of that,
yes,
it would definitely be a resource for that.
Okay. And I do think that's one of the biggest challenges, that it's so much bureaucracy and red tape with the government, or particularly with the VA. I think so many veterans just feel like it's just too much of a headache, or it's,
that's
I think they try once, they get denied. And kind of like you said, it's just, yeah, I think we just get frustrated and just eventually just give up when it's, yeah, it's benefits
exactly that, right,
that have already been earned.
So don't be that way.
Yep.
All right. You earned it. Get it. And well, when they tell you no, don't take no. Just put it in again. Be and that guy calling them every day.
I think what a lot of people think about as well, and even particularly veterans think, is that when they talk about benefits, it's mostly, I got out, I filed a disability claim, it got denied. And then that's maybe sometimes where some veterans end it there. But there's also, like you mentioned, there's...
Exactly, exactly.
There is educational benefits. Could you talk, or have you got enough into the book where you could tell people what other benefits veterans get through the VA?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Other than disability and education.
Yes.
There's also a program for job retraining.
Yes.
To get you back out in the workforce, if that's what you want.
Yes.
They'll take care of your family. It's a good thing when you pass, they'll take care of your family.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's just scads of stuff that they do that nobody really knows about, because nobody really does the research to find it out. And I'm in the middle of doing that now to be, you know, a highly qualified VSO. I will know all of that. And even though I know all of that, I'm not just going to give it out. I'm going to tell them where to find it.
Yep.
And let them do some digging on their own.
That way they're going to know the next time too.
Not only that, then they'll be able to help somebody else, because they will have dug up the information for themselves and now they can share it.
Yep. Awesome. Chief, I really enjoyed this show. I think what the listeners don't know is that maybe we're going to have another episode where we can get into all the stories that we maybe didn't include on this show.
Oh, no, sea stories.
Well, not just sea stories, but I know there's plenty of things we could look back at and unpack. And like I introduced the show was the value of the young officer and the chief working together. There's plenty of times we could talk through all the different lessons, the fires we put out, the definitely the tent, plenty of times I pulled you aside in the P-ways and said, what the hell are we doing with this? Or that one fateful day known as WOG Day.
Oh, yes.
So for everyone listening, the Navy obviously sits out on a big gray box in the middle of the ocean, and when you cross the equator, they make a ceremony out of it just because sometimes we need things to do out in the middle of the ocean. So they make a big ceremony out of crossing the equator. And then once you cross the equator, you're called a shellback. The ceremony, boiled down to simplest terms, is that people who've already crossed the equator basically have to cleanse the unworthiness off of people who have not crossed the equator. And naturally, I had not crossed the equator, and my chief had. And not only that, but one of the required positions for this ceremony is that they have what they know as the royal baby. And so they take one of the people who's already crossed the equator, and they had the royal baby. And I don't even know what all the position may include. Maybe you can talk to a chief. Why don't you tell everyone what exactly the royal baby does? Because
the royal baby basically was.
I'm starting to have a little.
On the ship.
I'm starting to shake a little bit. And have flashbacks.
So they take somebody that has a large girth, to put it nicely, and they make him lube up his gut, put a cherry in it.
With Crisco.
With Crisco, and all the unworthy wogs have to greet the royal baby and pull the cherry out of his navel.
After crawling up to him on their hands and knees.
Yeah. And well, let's just say I have a very special relationship with a lot of sailors. Some of y'all bit me. I'll never forget that, though. That was one of the greatest experiences in my naval career.
Now that you mentioned biting or punching or kicking or screaming or pulling hair, like, I kind of wish I would have thought of that 14 years ago.
You would have bit me?
Huh?
You would have bit me?
I didn't think of it then, but now that you're suggesting it, yeah.
I don't know how nobody could have. Doc Mata was launching people like it was nothing. Yep. But yeah, that was definitely a bonding experience.
Yep.
I'm sure that will sit somewhere in everybody that went through that's mind forever. That kind of leaves an indelible mark.
Yeah. And one of the things I noticed from my perspective, Captain Weilenman was a shellback, and I thought,
yes, he was.
I think that
a beard like no other. We were underway one day and he had a beard the next. I don't know where it came from.
Where I was going was that he very much got involved. And he either could have said, you know, it was ultimately, for everyone listening, Captain Weiland was the commanding officer of the ship. So ultimately, full responsibility for everything going on. So he would obviously have the authority to say, you know, we're going to limit this, or we're going to get somewhat involved, but we're not going to do too much. But he really did dive in. He participated a lot, and he really made it like a full-on ceremony himself. And what I was going to point out was that sort of dictated how the ceremony went, because he said, yeah, we're gonna do it, and he jumped in, and from there it's just sort of snowballed into a very memorable, scarring day where you crawl up to your chief and pull the cherry out of his belly. Join the Navy, pull a chief out of out of a belly. Yeah. I didn't see that on a recruiting poster.
No,
not at all.
The sign that said free floss either.
Nope, not at all. But the funniest part is that's the stuff we talk about.
That was a great day.
Yep.
I got sunburnt down one side and not down the other.
We don't talk about watch at 4 a.m. We talk about crossing the equator and the crazy things we do out there.
The stuff that leaves an indelible mark.
Yep. So once again, thank you, Chief. I did truly enjoy this.
Well, I really enjoy this too.
I hope we can do it again.
I look forward to our second go around.
Yeah, I think this one we started the drip. We introduced the concepts, and then the next one we'll really take the handcuffs off.
Okay.
And all we'll right. Leave it there, everyone.
Yeah, just leave it alone.
Yep. Okay. All right, Chief. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Thanks for picking me.
Yep. Thank you.